All right, next is issues concerning the enforcement of Iowa Utility Board's Agricultural Impact Mitigation Plan, the AIMP, as set forth in the Story County ISG contract from a landowner's perspective. Good afternoon. Oh, still morning. Still good morning by a minute.
We got another 2 minutes.
Keith, thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for letting us come speak to you. But by way of introduction, we've handed you a number of documents. I'm just going to quickly run through them for you. The first page has a bunch of business cards on it. I'm the top one. John Murray is another attorney. John and I actually co-founded a landowner group that actually took on the IUB, and that case is going to the Iowa Supreme Court in September.
Right.
Okay, and will be heard by an oral argument in September. Laverne Johnson and I are two of the party plaintiffs to that still in that particular case. We're not here about that, but I'm just making full disclosure, okay, in terms of that particular issue. Just to bring you kind of up to date where the process is, Dakota Access had 18 months to put the pipeline in. That period ended in February. They were supposed to have had all of the remediation work done. As it turns out, ISG, who you guys hired, that's the engineering group that you guys hired, we've talked to them off and on since December, January, Laverne and I have. They're still working on putting all of the reports that were there, okay, the chief inspector reports and the field reports and the tile reports and all of this together on a track-by-track basis, okay, and eventually, and on a county-by-county basis as well. And eventually, what they're going to do is they're developing a link for every landowner to be able to go up and access that information. Now, just to refresh your memory, there's 910 owners and 1,257 parcels in that 7 to 18 county area. So it's a big job to put all that information together. And Evan Duvall, who we've talked to, says his intent is once they get all of that information put together on a county-by-county basis, they intend to come to you folks at the county level and turn that over to the auditor's office and let the auditor be the one that actually, you know, passes that information out in some fashion. That may or may not cause you some concern in your auditor's office because it's one more huge project, and they are the ones that maintain the database, you know, and ISG is in terms of all of this information. And kind of as a result of the confluence of that, The way the process worked from the IUB standpoint was they're the ones that are in charge of enforcing the AIMP, the Agricultural Impact Mitigation Plan, which is how you tear it apart and put it back together. But they delegated to you the oversight, to each of the counties the oversight, and then you hired the ISG folks to go out and actually monitor the AIMP and supposedly enforce the AIMP from the county's perspective and the landowner's perspective in terms of all of that stuff, okay? ISG says they're still maintaining and working on what they call a punch list, which is things that are not done or have not been completed in terms of the remediation process. Again, the 18-month period is gone. We don't know what the legal authority is, frankly, for ISG or Dakota Access or anybody to continue, because IUB has not extended that 18-month period. And if you remember, there were two right-of-ways. There was the pipeline right-of-way, which was 50 feet, and then there was a working right-of-way, which was another 100 feet up to 200 and some feet where the pipeline valves and stuff like that were actually involved in some of this stuff, okay? So there's still a lot of questions up in the air. However, I'm a landowner. Laverne's a landowner. Arlene is a landowner, and we're now in our second year of dealing with the issues left by the construction process itself, okay? And so what we've got today is a presentation for you. The second document you're going to see is Story County Board of Supervisors, AIMP. Okay, we're going to talk to you a little bit about that. The third document is actually a copy of your contract with ISG in terms of that. And then we've got another document that's quite extensive, which is actually talking about the actual violations that we still see are there, okay, and we have some examples. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and launch into this. Vern Johnson's going to help us with this. We have about 50 slides we're going to run through very quickly, but I'm going to first draw your attention to this document, which is the Story County document, which is a 12-page document, and I want to quickly run through that, and then the slides will demonstrate, you know, for you where we're headed. Laverne and I actually have become quite concerned as a result of the damage that we have found on our properties, and so we hired Dr. Michael McNeil, who's a PhD soil scientist up in Algona. He's a protege of Tom Fenton. He worked some of you who've been, know Dr. Fenton. You actually were one of the four counties through the Soil Conservation Service that actually submitted, a documentation against the pipeline doing what they were doing. It was Boone, Story, Jasper, and Polk. Those four counties were really concerned about the pipeline, coming through here. As we say, the chickens have come home to roost as a result of pipe going in the ground. And now if you flip through this document I've got, I'll talk to you about the Story County Board of Supervisors AIMP presentation. That's not on the board per se. There are four major areas that Dr. McNeil has identified now as a result of the pipeline. One is the mixing of the topsoil, the A horizon, with the parent soil, the C horizon, the soil compaction and drainage issues, negative changes to the available nutrients and microbial life, and then a failure to remediate issues that, that could have or should have, been dealt with all along. The next two documents, the next two pages, actually four pages, are actually soil sampling results in Boone County from the Johnson property and from my own property. I'm a Webster County, person in terms of where my land is. And these are just showing you that the extensive soil sampling has shown there are massive changes now to the microbial life, the bacterial life, and the fungi life of the soil, in addition to the changes that we talked about to the soil horizons, the A, B, and C horizons, where they actually mix the clay into the topsoil, and that's going to affect the water penetration and a whole lot of other stuff that's there. So,
are these also on the computer?
No, they're not.
Thank you.
This is just to give you this is your take-home work. Okay, this is the summary. The summary of what's there. The other thing that has happened is because the sea soil, the parent clay, has been brought up into the topsoil. It has changed the soil pH. It has changed the actual calcium, magnesium, sodium, all the minerals that are up there available, and those are going to be a substantial problem to reestablish on top of the bacteria, the enzymes, and the fungi, and everything that's there. What we're trying to indicate to you is this is not a short-term fix.
Right.
Okay. There's a whole lot that's actually happening now that's been left on the table for the landowners to deal with. Then. There's some information in there about the soil mineral analysis on page 8 of that report. There's also some information on there that some of this could maybe be fixed in 3 to 5 years, but a lot of it is going to be a lot longer than that, okay, in terms of that. Then there's issues on drainage and erosion and the compaction caused by the heavy equipment. There's crop loss issues that are ongoing on top of all of this and not going to be fixable in the short term. And the fact that this parent material, this clay, is now up in the topsoil, that has totally changed the farmability of all of these soils in terms of what's going on. And then, of course, there's the huge compaction issue. Those of you who may have had a chance to look at Dick Lamb's property as you drive back and forth on Highway 30 where that trailer is and sitting there, the actual pipe was put in 10 to 12 foot deep, okay, which means that when they were driving all this heavy equipment back and forth, they've compacted the soils down 10 to 12 foot deep, okay? And one of the things that Dr. McNeil will tell you is that if the compaction exceeds 300 PSI, corn roots and soybean roots will not penetrate. And so there's massive concerns now at corn and soybean roots will go down 7 feet. Okay? And as they put all of this soils back over it, even if they did it in the correct way, they kept driving back and forth and back and forth. And so there's no way to remediate that deep soil compaction in any kind of immediate sense without doing some really different kinds of things other than planting row crops in there. So we're going to launch into the pictures in the AIMP now to give you some actual idea. Again, the AIMP, the Agricultural Impact Mitigation Plan, sets forth the standards for the installation and remediation. Again, we've got the three topsoil, subsoil, parent soil horizons, and when you mix those, you change the entire productive system for the row crops that are there. Go ahead. We have tremendous drainage issues. They were identified when they were taking the pipe in and out. Supposedly they fixed the tile, but what they didn't account for was they continued to drive the equipment back and forth over this ground. When you took off that top 2 foot or whatever of black soil and then drove all these big 80,000 pound or bigger vehicles over it, what they ended up doing is crushing even the CMP and the tile that was in the CMP. And so we have instances where people have replaced this not once but twice. Went because of the ponding and everything else that's gone there. So there are drainage issues because of the compaction. There are sheet rail erosion issues because there's no water infiltration where the compaction, you know, is there. So you're creating all these massive water runoff. We have structure and topography issues because the ground was not restored the way it was before they ever went through there. And they've used, in many cases, single wall plastic pipe. Single wall plastic pipe is like you've got to put on your drain spout at home, okay? And you run any kind of big equipment over that, you literally crush it, you change the water flow capacity and everything else. Go ahead. This is kind of hard to see, but Vernon, can you give us a little help in that? You can begin to see some black spots. Now go back.
That's it.
Yeah. You can begin to see, this is Vern's
problem. That light.
Yeah. There you go. Go back. There you go. That's much better. You see all the black spots that are there? That's where he's got huge compaction that has happened there, and that's not easily going to be taken care of. Go ahead to the next one. This is actually my farm. If you look up at the top, there was actually a 2 foot berm that was there all the way across that. Well, they hollowed out my farm because obviously when you put a pipe in, you want a road, a flat surface. So there actually was a 3.5 foot drop off on the other side, and they hollowed out my farmland and then never put that berm back in, nor did they replace the soil the way it should. Go ahead to the next one. This again is Johnson's property, showing you the property compaction issues that are there. Go to the next one. And this is Vern's valve site. There is compaction all over that. This is actually where they stored the equipment. They were driving back and forth. Yeah, on the left-hand side there, you'll see some timbers that burned down. Yeah, right there. That's supposedly what they called a mat. They were working off of those when they were working the heavy equipment, trying to keep it from sinking in. Actually, they broke a lot of that and they left it in the ground, which people have found out when they went back trying to do deep tillage. Go to the next one. This is what Vern's site looked after it was supposedly done. This is winter, and as you can see, all that water and everything else has ponded up in terms of around that particular valve site. Next one. This is, again, my property, and you can begin to see the sheet of rail erosion. That's actually a structure that's supposed to be stopping all that water and creating it and from going under. It actually is just going under and eroding the entire structure. Go ahead, next one.
And did you tell me that was originally a 3-foot
That was originally a 2-foot berm that was there, and they never put it back in terms of that. So now my particular property, which is only 650 feet, drains everything above down through my property and then down below. So we now have a super waterway drainage system that's coming right down through my particular farm. This is actually showing you an example of crushed, you know, tile that from the big equipment going back over it. And actually, if you look over on the right-hand side, that's actually tape where something was taped together rather than properly actually repaired. Next one. Vern, you might want to explain this one.
The water comes this way, and the splice is installed improperly. it should be like a funnel
right
going downstream. This is actually repair. And they installed the, it actually they just cut the plastic and shoved it to the upstream side.
That's the next one.
Well, it's actually...
This is what he's talking about. Where they, instead of doing a proper repair, all they did was take plastic, single wall plastic pipe, and shove it inside an existing tile. That's an improper repair because you have a restriction there that's going to the water flow and the siltation and everything else, and all you're going to do is create problems later on. Go ahead. This is, Vern, again, this is your property.
I had a camera run down. Spent about half a day running cameras and digging down, and this is, we ran it in as far as we could, and this is the siltation that they allowed on the downstream side.
Again, that's causing, you know, restriction to the flow and to the, and that will create, just continue to build up, you know, in over a period of time. Go ahead.
Further in there.
Okay.
We can go back. Further in there, that toilet tile was crushed, and all they could get through, they checked it with a tape with a 2-inch ball in it. And this tile starts out as a 12-inch tile, a 10, and then an 8. So this is between the 8 and the 10. And there's no way they could get an 8-inch or a 10-inch ball. They never checked it for that until we checked it with the camera.
Go ahead. This is actually Hans Geppinger, who's on the Boone Story County line. This is the what they found after they had repaired it when he went back in and was started getting water pounding and everything else. What happened was, again, they kept running their equipment back and forth, and this is actually their CMP and tile that was crushed by them continuing to run that big, heavy equipment back and forth over this at night and then just bringing the dirt back over it, and all of a sudden, well, of course, there was water came back up to the surface. So this is the problem with the compaction at a deep, deep level and not being taken care of properly. Go ahead. Okay. The next issue that is of serious concern is a dewatering issue. According to the AIMP, they were not supposed to take all of this water that was in the right-of-way and put it in your field. And the part of the reason is when you start dewatering at deep levels, like the 10-foot level, that's clay. And so what you're going to be doing is take that muddy clay water and bringing it up to the surface and then depositing it out in the right-of-way that they're not even supposed to be in. So they were supposed to have filtered all of this water coming out of there and not brought it into the property of the landowner unless they were, you know, had reached some kind of a financial agreement. They didn't do any of that. They just blew the water into everybody's fields. Keep going. Vern, explain this one.
They actually hit a spring underneath there. And you notice that intake is not, that's not in a floater or a float in it. And they're using this rather large pump here to keep that water level down so they can go under an existing 24-inch drainage tile I have, and they're using it and they're pumping it up and it's slide and show probably for the discharge. They had no float and no screen. They were just pumping it right out of the bottom. Silt and the parent material was all mixed up there.
Okay, again, at the very top of the picture, you see this pile of dirt up there. That's actually parent material, B and C soil up there. And if you look right underneath that, there's a whole layer of black dirt that was supposed to have been removed before they ever did any of this. They didn't. All they did was take, in some cases, they came in and said arbitrarily, well, you've got 17 inches of black dirt or 12 inches of black dirt. And once they move 17 inches or 12 inches, they just then brought the B and C soils up on top of the black soil, which immediately begins to mix the topsoil and the clay into your the part of your soils which are important for growth. The other thing is when you put the clay into the black soil, you then seal the water permeability, the ability of water to filter down through all of this stuff. Again, going back to our ability to go grow crops. Go ahead. AIMP says they were supposed to remove all of the topsoil before they did anything. Here there is a dewatering set up, and you can see the water's running right into Burns Field there.
There's another one up here that right. doesn't even have a discharge. It's just a hose that's running out. And this one has got a bag, but it's not adequate. And this is all covered with clay.
Okay. Next one will show that. Here's the clay that they brought up to the top surface by running all of that. So now you've got all of this clay parent material, not only, you know, in the right-of-way mix, but it's also in the adjacent field that's there. And once it's there, there's no way to get rid of it. You know, you've totally changed the pH and the crop, you know, nutrients and all this other stuff in that particular soil. Go ahead. This is another example of dewatering where they're running the water in, you know, into, you know, a farm field. Okay, go back. Okay, crop loss was a function of a lot of things, but the biggest thing is they were supposed to take all of the black topsoil, move it off the right, you know, away from the B and C soils before they ever began any of the construction process. They didn't do that. They came in some cases with their tile repair crews, and like that big hole that you saw where they were going under his 24-inch tile, they were actually boring before they had done anything else. They dug a huge hole to put, you know, to get that boring machine to go underneath his tile. And again, all they did was bring all that B and C soil up on top of the black dirt into piles, and that could never go back the way it should. Again, soil structure was changed. Microbiology has changed. Parent material is mixed. Go ahead, next one. This is what Lambs looks like after it's been put back together. And you can see this big area of crop loss here. Go ahead, the next one. This is another example of where the crop loss is permanent or is going to be substantial for a long, long time. Go ahead. This is Burns site again, where the you know, the all that water stood, and this is again Lambs, where you can see all along the pipeline route where the, you know, the crop are just not going to grow in any significant sense. Again, major issues, compaction issues, microbial and other, you know, crop issues, but also some long-term issues in terms of trying to remediate all of this stuff. Okay. Topsoil depth, proper and compaction, yellow silt clay, those are the three issues of the topsoil that we're going to have to try and deal with to regain some of the ability to produce crops there. And here's examples of the heavy equipment. You can see black dirt on both sides of where they're working, you know, in that hole. That's the hole where they were boring underneath, okay? And they never removed the black soil on either side that they should have. And again, they put the B and C soil up on top of the black soil, built the next one. This is where they're getting ready to put the pipe in. Again, the black dirt is all over that hole right away. They never removed all of the black dirt in that right away. And they're piling B and C on top of black soil. Next one. This is an actual picture of Lambs, and you really can't tell this, but that's black dirt that is still there. They only went down about 17 inches on his, and then just said that's enough, and they kept moving ahead. Go hit the next one. Here's what the property looks like. Again, the black dirt was never supposed to be tracked up and, you know, by all of this army of heavy equipment going back and forth, because that creates compaction issues. And even in the topsoil that are deep layered, you know, most of us with our farm equipment can go down 12 inches or 15 inches maybe at most. Can't even begin to touch the compaction layers that are there as a result of all of this. Go ahead, next one. Again, showing wet weather and then working in the wet weather and the black soil not removed. Next one. This is an actual picture of what is the top of the ground and the parent material that's been brought all the way clear up to the top of the ground. As you can see, there's very little black dirt or topsoil that's going to be, you know, put back over that one, because they didn't return the soils back the way they came out. They should have put the C soil in first and then the B soil on as much of it as they could on top, and then all of that 17 to 24 inches of topsoil The AARP basically is very clear that if there is topsoil, they're supposed to remove all of the topsoil. If there's an issue in the right-of-way where the right-of-way may be too narrow, they're supposed to ask the landlord if they can, or the owner, you know, if he wants all the topsoil removed, in which case the owner has to agree to expand the right-of-way. Okay, in terms of all of that, they never did any of that. They just arbitrarily said, you have 17 inches of topsoil, you have 12 inches of topsoil, and we're going to take that off, and then they moved right in with their machinery. So ISG, which was your hired agent, was the agent that was supposed to be in contact with all of the landowners in terms of discussing all of these issues. There isn't a landowner yet that I talked to, and I've talked to a large number of them, that was ever talked to by ISG about any of this kind of activity. Go ahead. Again, showing there's the you can see where the topsoil has been changed by the parent soil and the B soil right up on top of there. That's Johnson again. Go ahead. And here again, this is just another picture of them working in wet conditions. That pile to the right is all the black dirt they took off, and if you can tell from the other photos, should have been a much bigger pile. The Dr. Fenton, in his testimony, both in terms of the Soil Conservation Service and at the IUB hearing itself, said there should be three piles, an A pile, a B pile, and a C pile. And the Coda Access came in and said, no, only the A pile, and then the rest goes into a spoil pile. They know nothing about the soil of the Prairie Pothole area, okay, in terms of the Des Moines lobe and everything else. And in process of mixing the B and the C soil, they're mixing the clay into the sandy loam, which then seals everything below that as well. And they went one step further. They mixed the clay into the topsoil and the sandy loam, which creates water permeability problems all the way down. One of the people that we've talked to that has land over close to Arlene actually took a tile plow. You know what a tile plow is? And it goes down about 4 feet. He went on both sides of the pipeline with a tile plow, trying to break up the compaction down to 4 feet. And then he actually put a tile line in there, drug a tile line in there, which is not a good thing, because this whole right-of-way where they dug this out, and it's 30 foot wide at the top and 10 feet deep, but you know, at the bottom, is going to settle. So we estimate it's going to take 3 to 5 years just for the ground to resettle before you can go back in and really tile out. Otherwise, you're going to get, you know, hoops in the tile in terms of what's going on there. But he did that, and then he went up to Google Earth, and he said, well, the tile plow worked for the first 10 feet. That was it. Well, most tile works out to 50 feet, 30, 40, 50 feet
right,
in terms of that. But the permeability was lost throughout this whole thing. So you can imagine that this 150-foot wide strip is going to have to be retiled every 10 feet to try and regain some kind of uniform drainage as all of these landowners. And then they're going to have to deal with the compaction issue as deep as they can. And we'll get to that. Go to the next one. Again, these are the arguments on compaction. It's the wet weather and working in wet weather that's the extreme part of the compaction issues. Go ahead. Again, these are just more pictures of showing you them working in wet weather and putting the B and C on top of the black dirt. That was Bates, by the way. This is Lamb showing you them working in wet weather. We have pictures where the pipe is actually floating in
right
the ditch.
There. It's floating in there.
Right. Where Vern's got the pointer. Right up there, the pipe's floating because it's in water.
That's Highway 30.
That's Highway 30. That's where Lamb's property is. Yes, right there. And they just destroyed that right-of-way by virtue of all the traffic and everything else. Go to the next one. This is Lamb again. Again, all the black dirt is on top. You can see where they were. Over to the right, go back. Over to the right is that open ditch area where the pipe is. Vern, go up there, right in that area. Yeah, where the pipe was floating. Go ahead. Next one. Again, this is a picture where you're actually doing a tile repair. That hole is actually where they've dug up to do a, you know, a tile repair in terms of that. But you can see the black dirt was never removed, you know, in that area before they started working doing the tile repair. So all they did was bring up the B and the C soils on top of the topsoils, and then they compacted the hell out of it, driving back and forth with all of their, you know, equipment, trying to do these tile repairs. Next picture. Okay, down at the center there is where they're actually laid out to the left, Vern, down by toward land, right in there. That's the CMP, that metal pipe that they put the flexible tile in. Well, what they didn't count on is once they did the tile repairs, and even before they got, you know, the ditch open for the, you know, everything else that was there, they drove this equipment back and forth every night, every day, every night. And so what they did was compact all of the soil. And again, you take the top 2 feet off, and then you drive this equipment, which drops another 2 feet. You're compacting a lot of the CMP or the existing older tile or the clay tile or whatever, you know, that was in there at that point in time. So there are going to be a lot of continuous water issues. As I already showed you once, there's going to be a lot of re-repairs done, you know, as we go through these wet seasons and we find out that they crushed the repair that they did because they didn't do it right. The other thing that they were supposed to do is once they get the ditch open, they were supposed to stabilize that CMP with sandbags, okay? And instead of you know, sandbagging the entire bottom, they just sandbagged right underneath the middle like a teeter-totter. So when they started putting the dirt back in on top, they created unlevel situations in that pipe, and that's all going to have to be fixed. Go ahead. Again, showing more tile repairs going on in the wet conditions that are there. There's the tile set up to do that. Go ahead, the next one. This is actually where they're quote-unquote remediating. That tractor is actually dragging some deep tillage, but as you, go ahead.
Disc.
Is that what it is?
Disc.
Disc, okay.
They said they remediated it to 19 inches deep, and that chisel is running probably about 9 inches deep. That's all it is.
Yeah, and as you can see, there's light spots and dark spots, and the light spots are where they, you know, mixed in the parent material in terms of this and sealed that whole area by doing that. Go ahead. This is Bates again. You can see the wet conditions that they're working on. This next picture is my favorite picture of the whole thing. This is on Lambs. That's the result of working in wet conditions, is they got these huge clods that you'll never break up, you know, and by running a disc through that, you can run a disc through that forever, and you're never going to break that up to be where it was, you know, as far as, you know, the topsoil that was there. Go ahead, the next one. Here again, another pictures of Lambs working in that area. There's the pipe that's floating. And this is another favorite. This is Bates again. Can you see the track on the left-hand side? I can't. Now, the one on the right-hand side, you can barely see the top. That's showing you how – this is actually down in a hole. This is showing you how deep they went and what the compaction is like. The next one, same thing. There you go again. That's the kind of compaction that's down deep that we're going to have to try and remediate. And again, corn roots will not penetrate compaction more than 300 PSI. This is going to be a significant issue for every farmer along this right-of-way where they worked in these kinds of conditions.
Go ahead. Going back to that one, here's the toe straps on that excavator.
Yeah, to pull it out. Yeah, go ahead. And this is another favorite picture. This is a road grader with a decompaction on the back, and you can see he's buried himself in just trying to go through there and decompact the. This is before the topsoil gets put back. That's the topsoil pile on the other side. So he's trying to break up that compaction down, you know, 18 to 24 inches or more, and he's getting stuck. And they had to pull those guys out too. Go ahead. And this is a set of tracks there. That's a 6-inch set of pliers in there. Again, that's the kind of compaction that's down deep that you can't see when you drive by. It looks good. And the final thing I want to say is in the AIMP, the AIMP said several things. First of all, they're supposed to take all of the topsoil off in the working right-of-way. Okay? Then in the pipe right-of-way, which is the 50 feet, they were supposed to take 36 inches up to 36 inches of topsoil off in the pipeline right away, because we knew that was going to be a very deep excavation in terms of that. They didn't do any of that stuff. And the result of that was, when they put it back together in reverse order, they were supposed to crown where the pipe was. If you ever go out into a field that's newly tiled, you'll see black dirt in a crown over where the tile is. That's because it's going to settle over a period of time. They didn't do any of that. So what we now have is a 350-mile right-of-way that's going to settle, and it's going to create a super waterway from Lyon County to Lee County as all of this water comes down through there. Now, the AIMP says, well, if that happens, they can come back and regrade everything. Regrade with what? That's topsoil, folks. That's 80 CSR ground. Where are you going to go get 82 CSR of topsoil? In Byrne's case, they wanted to move his topsoil around in different parts of his field. He has 6 inches of topsoil in some, and he has deeper topsoil in other. And he said, not only no, but hell no, I'm not doing that. It's bad enough to deal with what I've got. These are the kinds of issues that you're going to be facing, because here's what the IUB did to you. They said, you have the duty to investigate farmer complaints. That's the next thing after the whole time period, 18-month time period is done. Well, Dr. McNeil, and Janet is the one doing this, is working with individual farmers to document all of the issues that are there, whether it's the micronutrients. So what he's doing is he's doing soil testing for the micronutrients and the enzymes and the fungi and all that between the disturbed and the undisturbed. He's doing compaction testings with a probe to see how much compaction is there. You can even grow a crop of any kind in those particular areas. He's actually going in and doing, going to do tissue studies to see what the difference is between plant available and soil available, you know, micronutrients that are there. He's going to be dealing with topography issues, because they were supposed to return the land to the original topography. Well, it's clear they didn't do that in many, many cases. And there's a whole lot of other things. Our initial estimate, and Vern, this is Vern and me, I got 650 feet and he's got, how many? 1,400?
Two tracks.
1,400 feet or something like of that. Our initial estimate is it's going to take $6,000 to $10,000 just to investigate the tracks. Again, 910 landowners, 1,257 tracks. That's a lot of money, okay, just to investigate. And that's not dealing with all the issues once you get there in terms of putting fungi and all this other stuff back in there to try and recapture some of the soil productivity once you break it up and go through that whole thing. The reason we're standing here today talking to you guys, we've been to Boone County, to Webster County, and now to you guys. We're trying to get to as many counties as we can. We would like to do a joint meeting with you guys in Boone County and Webster County and bring Dr. McNeil in to actually talk to you about this whole thing. You know, because it's been in the news, that Iowa State University has been hired to do a study by Dakota Access, and apparently there's $600,000 that's going to change hands with the result of that one-year study. 1 year will not do it, folks. And what's going to happen now is Vern is actually preparing a complaint, and I'm part of it, and Bates are part of it, and a bunch of us are part of it, going to the IUB saying, not only did they not remediate anything, they didn't even follow the AIMP. And enforcement of the AIMP is at the IUB level, not down at the county level. But the complaints are going to have to come through the county in terms of this whole mess. So what's going to happen is Dakota Access and ISG who say they're done, okay, they want to come to you and have you certify at the county level that the AIMP was followed, so that they're done then with the remediation process. And then if you certify that their AIMP has been followed, which we've demonstrated it is not, or we hope we have, then that triggers a 90-day period by which landowners have to file a claim through you, and then you have to appoint a county compensation board like you did the county eminent domain board, and then all of this has to go through that process. We want to stop that here at the county level. We don't want you to certify. We don't want Boone County to certify. In fact, we don't want 17 counties to certify this. And we want this thrown back at the up to the IUB level and say, enforce the AIMP, folks, because it wasn't properly followed in terms of that. And here's what we think the costs are going to be, and Dakota Action should pay the cost for each and every property, not only to find out what's broken, but how we go about fixing it. So that's why we're here today, is to try and, we'd like you and Boone County and Webster County and anybody else, other counties that you think would benefit from this, to come together, and we'll actually bring Dr. McNeil in to talk to you and give you concrete numbers and ideas and everything else to support your determination.
I appreciate that, Keith. To me, it makes sense, though, that we would... First question I would ask is, have you shared you guys' findings with ISG?
No.
Okay, so...
No, they claim they're not done. They claim that they're not done
so
yet.
But I think this ought to be part of the final report that they're putting together, that by contract they've got to come present to us.
They don't own it. They will not deal with us because we're individual landowners.
Right, but now that you've done this with us, yeah, we will forward. So our contract says we will forward this on to ISG, and this needs to be one of the questions, not just for Story County to ask, but for every county that contracted with ISG. Okay, so we've got concerns of these violations where it was not hit, and we need to get ISG's input on that. Either they're going to agree with you or disagree with you. Yeah, I think I know which way that's going to go. But we got to get, by our contract with them, it's got to all flow through them. But then I think what you're asking for is completely a reasonable request, that there's nothing in this contract that I can find that says we have to accept whatever report they bring us.
Right.
I appreciate you bringing all this information to us.
That's Vern's book. This is what Dr. McNeil is actually preparing on a case by case basis for that. What is that book, which is brought together all of the information, has the ISG reports, has the AIMP, has the individual violations. We actually, Vern did about 15 drone flights, and we've got hundreds of pictures, and we've probably got over 1,000 pictures of documentation across a broad number of people. We're in the process of we're going beyond what you're talking about. We're Bates and Geppinger and Vern and I, and we've got some people down in southeast Iowa and some people up in northwest Iowa. Okay, so we can show the systemic nature of all of this in terms of the whole pipeline. We're actually going to take this as one complaint to the IUB itself, okay, and say to the IUB itself, this was not done properly. You know, you're the enforcement people that are there, not the county.
IUB.
IUB is. And what are you going to do about the fact that they didn't enforce this? ISG has already told us, because Vern and I have been there, we're done. All we've got is a checklist of unfinished things. They call it a punch list. That once that punch list is completed, we're done. We're then going to certify that group of reports to the county auditor, and as far as we're concerned, we've met our contract clause. We're done. They have no power of enforcement over Dakota Access. They have no power of enforcement. ISG. They were only a monitor. That's all they were there to do. They'll tell you that. Their only job was to monitor and document. Okay? They have no enforcement powers, whatever. You're the one that has the enforcement powers at the county level. You are.
I have some questions.
Because you were supposed to be, if they brought you problems, you were supposed to then take those problems up to IUB.
Right, and if that's what you're calling enforcement, then okay, but I don't call that enforcement. We are, like so many things, the hub that gets to collect information.
Absolutely.
And pass it off.
Absolutely. No, this was intentional on the part of the IUB.
I'm going to ask my questions now.
No, please.
Okay, thank you. Okay, first of all, Janet, you work with the Dr. McNeil?
Correct.
Okay. How many Story County landowners have you already spoken with who are concerned?
I haven't. Keith has. They give me their information, and I prepare those books. I go through the AIMP line by line, compare it with the evidence, mostly of the ISG reports, and pictures that the private landowners have taken. And that's the evidence to see. A lot of the landowners were not allowed on their property, or they were in and out so fast they couldn't get out there to take pictures of what was going on, and they had concerns about their tiling, about their topsoil, and they were supposed to be given 24-hour notice before construction started, and the few landowners that I've talked to had not.
And so that is these two books are just Mr. Johnson's
That's correct.
Documentation. Okay. And so I'm trying to clarify here. Back to you, the lawsuit that's in front of the Iowa Supreme Court is about eminent domain?
No, it's about the permits only.
It's
only about the permit.
Okay, so and then you, but several other landowners along the pipeline's track are going to go and take one combined complaint to the IUB.
What we're doing is we're trying to establish two things, okay? One is on an individual property by property basis. We have complaints that the AIMP was not followed. Okay, that's as an individual property owner before the IUB. That's where everybody who goes to the IUB will go there as an individual.
Okay.
But we will then make an argument using Dr. McNeil's analysis of all of these properties along the line that this is not an individual problem; it's a systemic problem. Okay, that's there. And if it's a systemic problem, that puts it in IUB's bailiwick. If it's an individual problem, then they can drop it down and say, well, you have a complaint mechanism. You can basically file with the county and go through the county compensation. And we're saying no, not only no, but hell no, because that throws all of the costs of this on top of the landowner, the investigation costs. And as I've mentioned to you, much of this will take 3 to 5 years to determine in terms of what the actual damages are. Well, your complaint process doesn't give us 3 to 5 years.
My next question, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What, realistically, do you expect out of a meeting of several counties?
Well, first of all, we want you to be able to ask your questions of Dr. McNeil in a much deeper fashion than what I have presented to you today based on his analysis of all these different, you know, type of individual properties and soils and everything else. Secondly, you're the ones that have to certify that the AIMP was followed, okay? We don't know what happens if you don't certify. Okay, I guess the IUB could say, well, as far as the ISG is and Dakota Access are concerned, we're going to certify. But the technical process is until you certify, the 90-day day period is not triggered. So if you don't trigger that 90-day period, that leaves open-ended us to continue to investigate our properties and try and deal with, you know, the damage issues, you know, individually. And that's what we are already contracted. Each of us is individually contracted with Dr. McNeil and therefore Janet. You know, that's what this book is about. This book is to present to you on an individual property by property basis the damages that are at least foreseeable now. Okay. And they don't deal with crop damages. They don't deal with the permitting process. They don't deal with anything but the right-of-way damage caused by the construction itself. And that's a totally separate set of damages that are there.
So my next question has to do with, one could say that these are alleged, or they're allegations, right? ISG hasn't responded. We don't, okay, you're asking us to almost come in and take a look at everything that's happened. Some of it I can see just so that I can figure out that we're a 6-inch wrench and how much is above it. But there are other things that are way, I don't do on my skill set here. Okay, so if, let's say, the counties got together and we did ask questions that may not really be at the root of this, is did ISG honor their contract with us? Because that's what I'm hearing also here, is there's allegations that our contract was not fulfilled to specifications. Okay, is that one of the assertions you're making?
If you read, I have read many, many, many ISG reports, the chief inspector reports, the tile reports, the field reports, and they vary by the inspectors. There are several reports where it clearly states that ISG told Dakota Pipe or told Precision to stay off the tracks. It is too wet. Then they were called out to another track, and they went and proceeded anyway. There are many ISG reports where The ISG workers have made it very clear to the Dakota Access people, being Precision, you have not given us 24-hour notice. We have an agenda every day. You're splitting up crews. You are not allowing our inspectors to be there when you are out there doing the tile repair work, the opening up, the boring, and that was ISG's job. And then all of a sudden that you see there are no more ISG reports with those inspectors' names on them.
And my final question, all right, and looking long term with your efforts, congratulations for speaking up for what you believe and what has happened to you. People, you know, it's a scary thing to take on big companies, okay? But what's your very long term perceived outcome or favorable outcome? Are you looking for money for compensation long term of this? Are you looking for punishment of ISG and Dakota Access?
I think part of that, and I'm going to let Keith speak after I'm done, but part of the people I've talked to, they want their terraces replaced and fixed and not at their cost. They want their right-of-ways put back so they can continue to farm, because now they're not getting anything off of that. And the AIMP and the IS only calls for 3 years that they're going to have so much compensation. They want their tile fixed. That's expensive. They want their terracing fixed. It's expensive. And they want some sort of remediation done so they can continue to do what they've done on their century farms, which is grow row crops. It's expensive to go out there and do all these tests, to put down the microbials, to put down the antifungal, to try to work the soil, to do whatever plant remediation you need to do. And that's going to depend, because in some areas, they dumped a lot of parent material. And you can tell that from the soil tests that we've done. They dumped a lot of parent material in some areas. In some areas, it's not. It's dependent on what the work was done at the time and what the weather was done, how long of a track it was, there was a curve, if it was straight shot, if they clipped a corner. So it's very difficult to answer that question. Some people, because they just clipped a corner, they might be fine with financial, you know, compensation. Other ones are, no, we've got almost a mile on our tracks, you know, because it's multiple tracks. We want it fixed. And the AIMP clearly states that Dakota Pipeline said, we will remediate.
Yeah, what the thing you just stated is you're not asking for anything that Dakota didn't say they were going to do.
Correct.
They said they were going to put it back.
Correct.
Man, you want to come up so we'll catch on the audio and start by introducing yourself.
I am Marlene Bates. I am a landowner in Southern Story County. And if I am speaking correctly, the three of us did not sign a contract, have not received any money from Dakota Access. We are doing this ourselves because we believe that Dakota Access did not have the right to come in and take my land through eminent domain. I was here 3 years ago asking you to please turn down Dakota Access coming through Story County. And I'm back here today asking for more help. I haven't received any, I'm sorry. And I talked to three foremen. I live in Ankeny, but I was up at the farm every other day taking pictures. And my brother and I talked to two foremen, and they had not seen an inspector.
Right.
Any time. And I also found out by visiting with another foreman that the driveway that was put in off of 211 was not just a driveway for my farm. It was a driveway for the whole section. So everything that came in on my driveway and went clear across the whole section. And I only have half of that section. So all I want is a little bit of consideration and a little bit of help and backing from Story County.
Well, absolutely. And what we talked about 3 years ago and we'll talk about now is statutorily Story County has a role in this. And what we've talked about up till now, I think fits squarely with what Story County's role into this. So ISG, as I understand it, has to provide every county that they've done the work for with a final report, and then each county board of supervisors gets to decide whether they get to ask their questions, and they get to decide whether they accept that final report or not, which triggers other things happening, right? And I think the timing of you guys bringing, and let's call them questions, bringing these questions to us is completely appropriate because we need to take those questions forward. Whatever answers we might get, we may not get the answers you guys like, but that doesn't stop it from being appropriate for us to take those questions forward. And what I said to you 3 years ago and I'll say now is I'm an ardent believer that Story County fills its statutory role. I don't always like the statutory role we get, right? And there are more issues than just pipelines. Seems like many times we get to collect all the grievances without having the authority to do anything really with them other than pass them on. But it doesn't mean we're not an important piece of the process, trying to get to as good answers as possible.
I appreciate the questions you've asked, right? And I'm concerned that Story County has paid a great deal of money. We were reimbursed, I believe, but the contract for services that there are questions about whether were delivered or whether they were delivered in the appropriate manner. So that's an irritation, and I would like to look into that further. Okay, on that.
Can I suggest that we refer it to the county engineer and the county attorney?
And
let's be careful about making any accusations or perceived accusations that a contract wasn't filled without
correct.
Any direct evidence.
Correct.
Well, we're not making accusations.
I haven't heard you.
No, not at all.
We're
trying to inform you of the
Absolutely.
Issues that are out there. In fact, one of the things I gave you is a recent article from the Messenger in Fort Dodge after our supervisor meeting, which actually features Laverne and me and another farmer in terms of the issues that we're still dealing with. The Iowa State Daily just put an article out there as well, because we dealt with that one. You've got that one. You know, in terms of that. We're just trying to inform people. And going to your question, how many people in Story County? We're trying to get the word out throughout Story County that of this availability, okay, in terms of that. Because we're concerned not only in our own personal property, we're concerned along the whole route as well. The deed is done. It's in the ground.
Right.
The question is, what can we do to make it better for everybody, and who pays the cost of that whole thing? That's the issue that's there. And it's a liability with ISG or Dakota Access or whatever. That's not what this is about. This is about getting the best outcome we can for all of us landowners that we can do.
Keith, what I've heard you say is this is about getting the land put back like it was, which is exactly what we were told was going to happen, right? I mean, so those worried about eminent domain, you know what? That battle came and went. It is what it is. But Dakota Access promised all the way through that. We had representatives from Dakota Access sit in this room and promise that they were going to do a good job putting things back like they found them. And what you guys, and I don't want to understate what you did because it's a great presentation that you brought forward, but you at least, for me anyway, at least sufficiently raised questions as to whether Dakota Access did that. Now, you guys will say, oh, absolutely they didn't do it, and I think you've got lots of evidence of that, but it's our job to ask those questions. Did it happen? If it didn't happen, what's our role in this? At the end of the day, I don't see any pathway that doesn't go straight through IUB. I mean, that's where it's going.
Yeah.
But how county supervisors ask questions and then ultimately what action or inaction county supervisors take can help steer that conversation. But don't get your hopes up, and Keith, I haven't heard you say this, but I just want to say for everybody, don't get your hopes up that boards of supervisors are going to be able to magically band together and somehow force something to happen. We've got to play our part, but our part is to ask questions.
And that's the only reason we wanted to put you and Boone and Webster County together, is Dr. McNeil is the expert. He's a Tom Fenton protege. Tom Fenton is the soil guy, if you want to look at it. He's the one that testified before the IUB. And we think you're correct, and you need to ask questions, but I think you need to have the expertise of somebody who's a PhD soil scientist and knows this stuff, maybe to give you a little bit more insight into, you know, from his perspective, about why, how difficult it's going to be to put it back together, what didn't happen and should have happened, and then those are the questions you can ask ISG or whoever.
Sure, but my question is even more simple than that, Keith. Okay. My question to ISG and then to others is, okay, we were told all the way through that Dakota Access were going to come in and put this pipeline in, and when they left, they were going to have put things back. Tile systems, the soil, different things. Now, did we know? So every pipeline we have, and Marty can probably give us the number of miles of pipeline we have in Story County. Every mile that we have, you absolutely, you look at it from a 30,000-foot level, you can tell where pipelines go. This isn't unique to Dakota Access, right? I mean, when we disturb the soil that's been there for thousands of years, we're going to see issues. We're going to see yield issues. But that's a separate question, right? We know there's going to be some of that. The question that I have, and I don't need experts to tell me why this is true or not true. I just need to know, did Dakota Access put it back like they found it? And if the answer is no, then we raise that question. We say, wait a minute, we're responsible for gathering the complaints of Story County. We're seeing evidence, if in fact we see that evidence, that it wasn't put back like it was supposed to be. Now, IUB, you need to handle that because you said it was going to be put back like it was.
So, and my question back to the role of supervisors, I need to think more about this, about can and can't, and, you know, where the county fits into this.
Yep.
Okay. But so when we talk about was it put back, but I also am hearing that there are questions about whether individual Story County landowners might have not had the access that was promised or the control that was promised or the courtesy. I'm pulling these words out just as I'm listening to the examples here today. I don't know if they are quite the appropriate words, but I'm hearing that there may be a possibility we had some landowners who felt that the process itself in creating what needs to be put back together may have infringed upon, and I'm not talking about the eminent domain here, I'm talking about if there was supposed to be an inspector there and they got 24 hours notice, et cetera, that they may have had their individual understanding, individual rights superseded or not given to them. And so I'm wondering if that's part of our role also. So, as I say, I'm not quite sure what our role is, how much of our expansion is.
So, as I understand the contract, when a concern or complaint comes forward, or came forward, or comes forward, from a Story County resident, generally it triggers through our county engineer is where the complaint comes from. So they'll go to our county engineer, and the county engineer by contract forwards that concern on to ISG for ISG to investigate. Then you get into a whole separate set of questions of was ISG able to adequately, were they given enough notice, were they given all kinds of things, and my hope is that ISG is going to fairly and accurately report out on that, good or bad. Going to fairly and accurately report out on that when they give us the final compilation of all of their efforts on our behalf.
And then my next question has to do with the certification, right? Are we certifying when we're asked to certify? We certify that it was put back the way it was supposed to be. That's what we're certifying.
That's what we're asked to certify, is that they did as you were directed, put it back together.
Which is what was required by IUB.
By AIMP.
By the AIMP, and it's why, so we had a choice to make as a county, and other counties had the same choice to make. We could have either kept it in-house and we realized we didn't have the manpower to keep the inspections in-house and certify that Dakota Access was doing what the IUB told them to do. So we relied on ISG to provide that. As did every other county use ISG?
14 counties.
14 counties used ISG. And now, as I understand it, ISG is compiling their final reports on everything, which they will then give to the counties.
Auditor's office.
And then we either have to, I think we can certify, not certify, or take no action, I think are the three options that are before us when it gets here.
Yeah.
And then that triggers the next step with IUB.
Your county attorney would be the one you need to talk to on that one. I'm not going to advise you legally on what that is. We're simply saying that ISG as your agent, whether it was dealing with Bates or Vern or me or quite a number of other people across all of the counties, they were supposed to be a messenger between Dakota Access and the landowners, and there was no message. They just were between Dakota Access and whether Dakota Access could do something or not. And they were supposed to bring information back to you guys if there was any major problems out there between landowners or Dakota Access refused to follow their directions. In most cases, there was little or no interaction with landowners. So landowners were never involved in the enforcement of the AIMP. And the only ones who made determinations on the AIMP were ISG and Dakota Access. And we know that there's a link there because Dakota Access was paying through you guys, the ISG folks, at a very high rate.
Right.
And they had a mile and a half of pipe to get done every day. And so they were basically saying, if you don't like it, sue us. If you don't like us, sue the county. If you don't like, that's the way the whole system worked. And the AIMP is very specific about the fact that landowners were supposed to be brought into this process at every step of the way, whether it's a notice requirement, whether it dealt with how much topsoil was removed, whether it dealt with any of the other issues in terms of tile repairs or anything else. Landowners were supposed to be given the opportunity, and none of that happened. That's all we're saying.
And that's part of the AIMP.
I've given you a copy of the AIMP.
Yeah, and I
will,
yeah. Okay,
so you can look at it yourself.
Other questions? Marty, anything?
A little bit about utility board handed it to us. They took meetings on this and they gave us any chance to cover down. I said there, you've done a fine job. Congratulations. You did aerials and drones. You're right on the curve. We're losing the ability to visualize any of our. You know, we're Story County supervisors. The ability to visualize the pipeline that's came through our county will be put under crops here in a short period of time. It's quite easy when you sit there and see the clay that is pulled on what the pipeline is transitioned, whether they did the proper return of the constituent soils in the way that they contractually are obligated to do. And I'd like to know what our story is, but I think we're going to lose that ability. I being comfortable with going and listening to Dr. Ben. I think that I could stand the real opportunity to learn something. And throughout the entirety of this, any other organization reach out and form any kind of offer collaboration or alliance with you?
No.
You're just doing this out on your own
volition? Well, I yes and no. The long story short is Laverne and I have been in this from the beginning. I'm an attorney. I spent 32 years as an IRS estate and gift tax attorney in the western two-thirds of Iowa. I've owned farmland in my family for 60 years. He's owned it for 122 years. And we're the primary drivers of the Private Property Rights Coalition, which is a landowner group that started out to fight the pipeline, but now is reorganized and trying to put it back together, put the land back together. So all of these members that you're seeing here are all want one thing. We want the best possible outcome we can get. This is not about money. This is about legacy. It's that simple. Look at us. I'm 70 years old. He's 80 years old. You know, we got kids and grandkids who are going to inherit this. This is about legacy. And we don't think we should have to pay, like I said, the $6,000 to $10,000 just to investigate, and then all the additional costs, you know, that are going to have to be done for remediation and that are there. So we're asking your help in making the IUB aware and educating yourself. And I think Dr. McNeil can give you a lot more insight than what I'm able to. in terms of this whole process. So we would be happy to facilitate with you putting something together. And if there are other counties that you like, Jasper or Polk or you know, through the soil services or whatever, that would like to come and ask questions, we all have an oar in this water. I mean, the next thing that's going to happen is guys like me are going to come back to guys like you and say, my land's not producing. My assessed value is based on production. My production is way down. I don't want this assessed as farmland anymore because I'm losing money on it every year. I mean, that's the next 6,000 acres, guys, across Iowa that are affected. That's a lot of acres, not to mention the value of all of that stuff. So, yes, that's going to happen. But at this stage, we just want a dialogue to start, and we'll assist you.
But you've done a good job starting that. Yes, sir.
On the facts part of it, I have 16 drone flights that shows this crime actually in action, where they're mixing the topsoil. I also have hundreds of stills. So whatever that we have or I have, you know, you're welcome to use if you want to use it as just the facts, because it wasn't. I had more pictures taken of myself than if I had auditioned for a TV show.
Yeah, if you guys' goal today was to make sure that you gave us enough information to ask questions as we get that final report, I'd say mission accomplished.
That's all we want.
You achieved that. No promises on where it goes from there, but you achieved us thinking critically about this and asking the questions.
Mr. Johnson, I do have a question. When those photos were being taken, did you ever try to communicate then with ISG or Dakota Access to say, don't do this, or please fix it as it's happening?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You're asking that. My sister and my mother own the farm, like during the construction, you'd like to go out there to see what's going on? Nope, you have to stay by the side of the road. You can't see what's going on. So that Dakota Access, everybody else said, no, you can't come on your own farm. You can't come on your own farm at all. And so that you were not given the access to see what was going on. And we have ISG is not the infallible situation. We're just out planting and at a wet spot. So we called up ISG and says, here's the wet spot right here. He says, well, we don't have any tiles located there at all. And that says, we tiled it 4 years ago. If I wanted to hook up my tile plow, I could go and pinpoint within 6 inches. Well, we were never we never repaired any of those tiles through there at all. Where was the inspector that day? So that just because ISG had an inspector does not necessarily mean you had any value. You guys got charged. Basically, this is our justice building. You guys have headaches with it 20 years after. We're going to be having headaches with it. This is our justice building. And we're fighting like a son of a gun because when I called up ISG to get it taken care of, we'll get right back in touch with you. So far, it's been 14 days, and I'm still having pulled my phone in my pocket waiting for my reply to get my tile fixed.
Ellingson Tile, which is the tile group company that did that, is right now in southern Illinois working on another project. I know of several landowners who have crushed tile, have water problems like we're talking about, and Ellingson said, well, we might get there sometime late this summer. So one of the tile guys, the one that had all those broken CMP pipes and everything else, that was the first go-around where Ellingson came in and did it, and then he had water there. He finally got a permission through Ellingson and the company above them that was the major construction company to go ahead and make a repair himself. He did. He's still waiting 2 years later to be paid just $3,000 for the repair work that was done. That's the kind of response that we're getting as landowners. And Ellingson is no longer approving checks because the person above them is not paying them. So they're not putting money out, even though, you know, they are responsible for fixing it. There's no money coming out that way. you're not the only county that hasn't been paid. We've actually surveyed all 17 counties, and you'll see something coming out shortly that says there's a lot of counties out there with money waiting Dakota Access to pay them, you know, for the, you know, the ISG, you know, type of work.
Are we still out money?
So, I mean, there's...
How much? I'm not sure the DMO. I'll check with DMO, but there's still an outstanding amount.
There is
an outstanding amount. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, this is not uncommon, frankly, in terms of what's going on at the county level or the farmer level or whatever. And it's not just issues. It's crop loss issues. It's all of these issues, you know, that are driving this boat as far as the farmers. And as you know, we're not making a lot of money farming right now.
Right.
Oh, it was my understanding. This is before I came on the board, but that there was a group, an internal group of department heads, maybe that checked in with ISG once in a while. Am I not understanding that correctly? I'm looking at Deb for some reason. I was thinking it was like the county engineer and
that's where we have the most contact.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And let's be clear on money owed, at least as I understand it. The way the money flows is ISG submits a bill to the county. The county submits that bill onto Dakota Access. Until we get paid, ISG doesn't get paid. So it's not like, yes, the county's waiting on money, but we've not paid ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, public forum number two, opportunities for member of the public to talk about anything you want. Anybody wishing to do so, please come on up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments. Boy, do I hope you guys are brief today. Marty.
Pass.
Morris.
I'm just going to go with one then. The safety committee met last week. Fascinating. I learned lots of information from Todd. And I've got a little, I think you're shocked or whatever, but I'm just amazed at this journey, and we're going to go on. So one of the instructions that we all have is that we all need to create a list, and that includes elected officials, of a list of our routine duties and non-routine duties. So I'm passing it along.
Okay, well, I'm engaging you. I'm sitting here just thinking, I'm just going to say that again.
Okay, all right. So one of the things that Todd Lundvall, our new risk safety manager, is asking of all employees, including elected officials in the upcoming about month or two, is to create a list of routine and non-routine tasks. And non-routine includes any task you do 6 months or you only do once 6 months or less. So I believe it's for him to assemble, you know, kind of some OSHA documents and to figure out where risk is. But so I'm just passing on to you two, since you are my peers, okay, that we should start figuring out exactly what our routine and non-routine tasks are, and hopefully that we'll get a list together out of that. So that's what I'm going to pass on to you today, okay?
Super. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Anything else for us today?
No.
Take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.